Verizon. It is 9 a.m., so we will call the February 3rd, 2021 Board of Directors of the Eastern Municipal Water District meeting to order. And I'm going to ask Madam Clerk if you would be so kind as to do a roll call and make sure that our legal counsel is on the line.
Sure. Director Toronto?
Counsel's here.
Thank you, Stephen. Director Record, are you on the line?
I am. Good morning.
Good morning.
Good. And the other four directors are here at the dais. With that, I'm going to ask Director Corona if he would lead us in this morning's flag salute.
Please stand, face the flag. Ready? Begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
April, do we have any guests in the audience?
We don't have any guests in the room. However, we have several on the phone.
Okay. Do we have anyone who has indicated they would like to do a public comment this morning before the board?
Not that I'm aware of.
Very good. With that, we'll go to item two, which are our executive reports, and I will ask the general manager if he'd like to give his report.
Thank you. Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. My written report's included in your package. I just have a couple quick items, two quick items I want to update the board on. We've briefed the board previously on our Santa Ana River Conservation and Conjunctive Use Program, and that program includes an agreement with Metropolitan Water District among MODOC, Western, Eastern, IUA, and OCWD to acquire water from Valley Municipal Water District, San Bernardino Valley, which is a separate state water contractor for storage in the SARCUP facilities. And that storage of that water would give us what's known at Metropolitan as an extraordinary local supply benefit during a drought. Because Valley is a separate state water project contractor, we cannot buy water directly from Valley. That water needs to be acquired, sold to Metropolitan, and then acquired by the SARCUP agencies through the Metropolitan Water District. Valley's arrangement with Metropolitan is when they have surplus state water project water, that they would sell that water to Metropolitan, and half of that water would be made available for the SARCUP program. The other half Met could provide to its other member agencies in its normal supply. So we've been working on this for a number of years now. And most recently, several months ago, the agreement was being considered by the Municipal Water District Orange County Board of Directors and their staff, and they requested that they could have access to a portion of the SARCUP water available from Valley that was being made available by Metropolitan. We had several months of negotiation with MODOC. MODOC's interest was they serve South Orange County. They wanted to have the ability to have access to extraordinary supply water to serve South Orange County. Our position was the water that was made available from Valley was for the Santa Ana River watershed. Valley was very clear on that. But what we were able to do is come to an ultimate compromise with MODOC, and that compromise is if our agencies feel that there is excess water from our program, in other words, the water banking facilities are full or we don't have the capacity to take the water, we would offer that to MODOC. Or alternatively, Met may be setting up a local extraordinary supply program with its portion of the water, and MODOC would have access to that. So I kind of simplified several months of negotiations. These also involved Director Record, who was very helpful. We set up conference calls with MODOC's board president and their Met director, Sat Tamarambucci, and their general manager. But what we were able to agree on a term sheet, finally. We got an email back from MODOC that they were comfortable with the terms and conditions. All the other parties are comfortable as well. So legal counsel is now converting that into an agreement. What that also does is, the same time, it frees up Met's ability to finalize its agreement with the rest of us. So we'll have these two agreements. They'll comport with one another, and they'll reflect those terms. So hopefully we'll get these agreements in a place where we can get them processed in the March timeframe. But I think we've made a significant step forward, and We're not seeing any opposition now to going forward with this SARCUP agreement at MET. Under items of interest to the board, we had a great opportunity earlier this week with Director Armstrong to meet with the City of Menifee on the septic to sewer conversion project out in Quail Valley. We also had one of the key community leaders out there participate in the meeting. Very good to hear such strong support from the city, and they're certainly willing to continue that support. The Regional Water Quality Control Board is setting up a task force in which the city, Eastern, and other interested stakeholders will be very active on this to trying to seek outside funding. So it was a very good meeting, and we discussed kind of where we stood on the project, where we are with our two planning grants for subarea 4, and then what we see as a future funding need and the ability to advocate for outside funding. So in that regard, we're also working with kind of a regional collaborative of agencies for septic to sewer conversion funding in a potential climate resilience or water bond that may be come up this year. The Senate in the state has already introduced a possible vehicle for a water and resilience bond, SB 45. The Assembly is going to be introducing its version of a bond vehicle in mid-February. We have learned, based on some of the advocacy we've done on the Assembly side, that the Assembly, from the Assembly Water Parks and Wildlife Committee consultants, that it appears that the Assembly version of the bill will include funding for septic sewer conversion. And so I think that's a very good sign. So our coalition, which are agencies in both San Bernardino and Riverside County who are affected by this, have now focusing back on the Senate to make sure the Senate bill SB 45 could be amended to potentially also include septic to sewer conversion funding. So those are some efforts that we have going right now. So with that, that concludes my report, and happy to answer any questions.
Any questions for the general manager? Very good. Thank you so much, sir. Laura, do you have anything for us this morning?
It's just a quick request from Director Armstrong. He requested that I kind of outline our overview of our budget process. Since he's new, I wanted to let everybody know that we're kicking it off this month. So we have a series of workshops, and we start off in February with kind of overviewing kind of our budget assumptions, cost drivers, and so forth to get board input on anything that you think might be something that we should be looking into. And then in March, we come back with a compiled operating summary, and we go over all of our service areas, water, sewer, recycled. And at that time, we will have some preliminary rate estimates that we'll present to you so that we can start talking about that. And then in April, we'll bring our CIP along with kind of our overall budget summary, everything that's been compiled, and what we think the proposed rate should be, and our Prop 218 process. We'll get the board's blessing or input, and then at that point in May, we will start our public reporting process, our proposed Prop 218 notification. And then in June, we will hold the public hearing and a budget adoption. So that's kind of the role. So we give plenty of time so that the board has plenty of time to discuss different areas of the budget.
That's perfect. Thank you. I just asked Laura that 2 minutes ago, so I appreciate that. Thank you.
You're welcome.
She hasn't been thinking about it at all, Director Armstrong.
Very good. Nick, anything for us this morning?
Yeah, I'd like to provide you a brief update again on the Fallbrook Rainbow reorganization process, just to keep you apprised of where we're going with this. It's a slow process. There's not a lot of development. But this week, on Monday, there was the advisory committee meeting. The review, the process is currently being managed through this advisory committee, which we are a member of. And a few minor developments there. As you may remember, San Diego LAFCO hired an outside consultant, a Dr. Michael Hanneman, to look at some of the key issues, specifically the water rate impacts to the member agencies of San Diego County Water Authority, look at a potential departure fee for Fallbrook and Rainbow to leave the San Diego County Water Authority and annex into Eastern, and then look at water reliability Last time the committee met, which was 2 months ago, the consultant had indicated that he's got volumes and volumes of materials and documents to review, and it was agreed that he would need about 2 months to do that and then come back with a report out, but he was specifically going to focus on the water reliability aspect. He felt that that was a good way to get a comprehensive understanding of the players and the issues before he digs into the finances and the cost. The development is that this week he came out with a report and really didn't provide anything of significant, but indicated that first and foremost he was going to focus on the water rates and the departure fee, which was kind of reversed to what we were anticipating, and provided a series of about seven questions that he need answering to, and they're kind of all over the board. A lot of them are focused towards the San Diego County Water Authority with regards to their programs, their costs, their CIPs, and so he's looking for some more information. What struck me was I think a lot of what he's asking for is already in the materials that he's been provided. So, but that's kind of where we're at. He's indicated that he wants answers to those questions within the next few weeks, and then he's anticipating another. He has a process where he defines a quiet time where he can go away, and he's not really looking for any additional input until he can digest what he has before him. So we're not anticipating to hear back from him until April, once he's had these questions answered. There's nothing specific that's been addressed to Eastern, but both Fallbrook and Rainbow's general managers reached out to me yesterday, and they'd like some feedback from us as they prepare some responses to these questions. And again, from what I can glean from our discussion, I think it's materials that we've already provided to some degree. So we'll work with them on that. The other interesting development is that LAFCO has hired another consultant, an Adam Wilson, to moderate the process. The executive officer of LAFCO thinks that this will be a more effective way to manage the process, will allow him to step back and kind of monitor from a higher level, and then this consultant will monitor the ongoing activities. Fallbrook and Rainbow express some concern with the time and, more importantly, the cost of what this is going to entail now with additional consultants. So they're working their way through this, and we'll continue to support the process as best we can. But that's kind of where we're at this point in time. And as things further develop, I'll let you know where we're at. And on a side note, as we're continuing to be part of this process, we're also working through a document search for a Public Records Act request that we received from the San Diego County Water Authority associated with Eastern's participation and coordination of this effort. That's my update.
Any questions for Nick on that? Nick, I did have one. Is the departure fee something that's statutory in any kind of code, or is this sort of a new made-up term?
No, and as Fallbrook and Rainbow keep on emphasizing to LAFCO and their consultant in the San Diego County Water Authority Act, there is no reference to any kind of an exit fee or a departure fee associated with a member agency leaving the County Water Authority organization. And so, I mean, that's a point that they keep on making. But they've acknowledged that there will be a process in looking at what obligations that they may still have and owe. But there's a vast chasm of difference of opinion as to, you know, what that would constitute.
So have they come up with a formula that constitutes what a departure fee, or is it just something they threw out there?
There's no formula that's been identified, and this is one of the tasks that this consultant will be looking at and providing some kind of a recommendation to LAFCO to consider.
Okay. Thank you very much. Joe, good morning. Anything
good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Just one brief update. As you may recall, in 2016, we removed Well 59 from service due to elevated PFAS concentration. As you're aware, Well 59 is located immediately south of the March Air Reserve Base. And subsequent to removing the well from service, we entered into a series of funding agreements with the Air Force given that the origin of the PFAS plume is from historic firefighting activity at the base. I'm happy to report that the well is back in service. As of late January, we completed the construction of the wellhead treatment that was necessary, and we were able to amend our permit with the Department of Drinking Water. So the well is back in production, treating PFAS and producing approximately 1,100 gallons per minute. That's it.
Excellent. Any questions for Joe? No? Mr. Wall.
Good morning, Mr. President, members of the board. Just one item. With the construction of the Paris wastewater, or, I'm sorry, the Paris 2 desalter, there's a coming Edison shutdown necessary to install a new meter, and the date on that is kind of in a state of flux right now. Bruce Mitzel and Field Engineering is trying to nail down Kiewit and Edison as to when that date would occur, but in the absence of that, we're going to have to make a decision here probably within the next week or so as to whether or not we need to discharge some water from storage at the Sun City pond area. Short of that, the way the weather is today, I think we're looking pretty good. Good chance that we will not have to discharge. There's no rain in the forecast in the coming 10 days. So there may be a small discharge associated with just freeing up storage to allow a place for that water to go while power is disconnected from the entire property. So we'll continue to coordinate with Field Engineering and try to nail that down and then apprise the board through our updates, weekly updates on that status. That's all I had.
All right. Thank you very much. Any questions on that? Very good. That will bring us then to the consent calendar portion of our agenda. Do I have any board members who want additional information on a consent calendar item or would like to pull an item for further discussion? Seeing none, I will ask for a motion and a second on the consent calendar.
I'll make the motion.
I'll second.
Motion by Director Armstrong, second by Director Corona. Madam Clerk, would you call the roll, please?
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes the 5-2-0. That will bring us to our discussion calendar. Item A, which is to approve and authorize a one-year agreement with 4 and one-year optional renewals with SE Pipeline Construction Company to provide asphalt maintenance and repair service in the full term not to exceed $3.3 million. Good morning, Dan.
Good morning, President Pauly and members of the board. As mentioned, this is a recommendation to approve and authorize a one-year agreement with up to 4 one-year optional renewals with SE Pipeline to provide asphalt maintenance and repair services in the full term amount of $3.35 million over the 5 years, or $670,000 per year, estimated per year. So asphalt maintenance and repair services are a high-volume contract for the district. These services are performed throughout the service area on an as-needed basis, effectively on a daily basis. Services include saw cutting, removing and replacing asphalt, applying sealants, grinding, and providing traffic control, which is a significant part of the contract. Services are performed, as I mentioned, on a daily basis. They cover pipeline repairs, service line installations, roadway subsidence, and assistance with maintenance operations group, as well as engineering on various projects and assignments that come up over the term of the agreement. As shown on page two of the board letter, the size of the repairs have grown significantly over the past 5 years. In particular, in the last 2 years of the current contract, the size has increased by 60% on average. Part of this is due to requirements within the various cities, and I know that our engineering and our operations and maintenance departments are working with these cities and our service areas to right-size those repair requirements. And I know we have recently entered into an agreement with the City of Moreno Valley to define some of those requirements, and I know we're working with the other agencies as well to firm up the type of repairs that are necessary within their jurisdictions. So in preparing for a new contract term in December of last year, the procurement staff received proposals under RFP number 3336 for asphalt maintenance and repair services. We received 3 proposals, and SE Pipeline provided the highest scoring and the lowest cost proposal. Scoring results are summarized in the table on page one of the board letter. And I'd just like to mention a question that Director Armstrong brought up in the O&E committee. You'll notice in that table that the pricing score reflects a weighted average score, similar to the other criteria in the RFP. Typically, when we summarize scoring, we provide some form of a dollar-based information for the board. But in a contract of this, with multiple materials, multiple pieces of equipment, different labor rates, what we do is we compete the pricing component based on mock jobs. So there are a number of mock jobs that go out as part of the RFP package. The respondents fill out their proposal for a specific size or type of job, including the materials and the equipment and the various labor that's required to complete those jobs, and that forms the basis of the pricing score. And importantly, that information translates into the contract so that those contractors' pricing that they provided as part of that proposal is then becomes part of their contract, and we can manage it accordingly going forward. So that was the reason for the weighted average score or the weighted score summary for the pricing component. So expenditures over the previous five-year term have averaged approximately $630,000 based on current volumes and requirements, projected maintenance. Similar costs are anticipated over the coming five-year term of approximately $670,000 per year. That includes the potential for escalation in materials costs and that sort of thing, but those are tied to CPI index. So with that, it is recommended that the board approve and authorize a one-year agreement with up to 4 one-year renewals with SC Pipeline Construction to provide asphalt maintenance and repair services in the full term, not to exceed total of $3.35 million. Are there any questions?
No, I didn't have any questions to option engineering, but it's tied to the CPI. Why is it not tied to the engineering record?
There are so many factors within that contract, as mentioned, labor, equipment, materials, and so many factors that go into that. We do link it to the CPI. Sometimes we will get requests that may exceed that, and we will look at the specific components of that.
Asphalt or something.
Exactly.
Like that,
exactly.
Price or something.
Right. And we require information from the service provider supporting their recommendation for a cost increase.
Okay. Great.
I'd move staff's recommendation.
I'll second.
The item has been moved by Director Corona and seconded by Director Slauson. Might I get a roll call vote, please?
Sure. Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the item passes 5-0. We'll move on to item B, which is to adopt a proposed resolution declaring parcel assessor parcel number 330-150-005 in the City of Paris exempt surplus land and approve and authorize agreement for a exchange of real property and joint escrow instructions with Green Valley Recovery Acquisition LLC. Good morning, Mr. Ward.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. It's my privilege to bring this item to the board this morning. This is, in fact, a no-cost land exchange with a local developer, whereby we would set aside enough property for a proposed capital improvement plan booster plant. So the district parcel is located in the City of Paris on Marietta Boulevard, north of Ethanac. It's approximately a half acre in size. You can see there in the image, it is what we call our 1960s vintage with the ornamental block. It's also a bunker-styled booster plant, partially below grade. And its operational deficiencies include the challenge with expanding the capacity of this booster plant. This is a key booster plant to bring water from the south side of the district to the north. And expanding the capacity of this booster would be incredibly expensive for the district. Along those lines, it's been prioritized for its replacement in our water facilities master plan, and the replacement of this is already a proposed capital facility in our CIP. The land exchange would, in essence, provide the district with a site greater than 1 acre. We would relocate this booster from the south parcel to the parcel to the north on this map. It's going to improve our safety, efficiency, reliability, operations, and maintenance allow us to meet future hydraulic performance criteria. But to do so, the existing booster plant would have to remain in service, and the developer is willing to grant us an easement for that continued operation. To satisfy the funders, if you will, of this development, the district would be asked to secure performance of its demolition and basically vacate that parcel for the potential to construct additional homes. So that performance guarantee is $250,000 is what we negotiated. It would require us to demo that facility by, I believe, September of 2025, which is well within our planned CIP plan. Here's a balance table for the acquisition. The developer would have to convey to the district its one-acre parcel at no cost. The district would then convey to the developer our half-acre parcel at no cost. We would set in an escrow a $250,000 performance guarantee. We would pay title, survey, fencing, and district staff time to the total of $320,000. Now, to perform this, this board needs to consider the status of that real property asset of that half acre. So in alignment with the Surplus Land Act, the board needs to, by resolution, determine if this is either exempt or qualifies as Surplus Land Act. It's staff recommendation that this parcel is exempt because we are, in essence, trading one piece of real property asset for a real property asset for continued district operational use. So because we are swapping a booster plant site for another booster plant site, it falls under the exempt category for the Surplus Land Act. Regardless, it still needs to be found by board resolution, and it would be submitted to the California Department of Housing, who now has oversight over that process. So the recommendation today is adopt that resolution finding that the parcel is exempt, authorize the general manager and staff to implement and execute the agreements necessary to administer this process, and appropriate the funds in the amount of $320,000 for the district share of the acquisition, security deposit, fencing, and survey of the new site. With that, I'll be happy to take any question the board may have.
I don't have a question, but I would like, if you went back one slide, I'd like to congratulate you on using the I'm just a bill on Capitol Hill image on that.
Yeah. Thank you very much. I have to give credit to our real property manager, Cheryl Sanders, who,
all right,
who took that right off of...
For the record, that warms my heart, okay?
Yes. There you go, Cheryl.
Any questions for Mr. Ward? I will then look for a motion.
Mr. President.
Okay. Moved by Director Record.
Second.
Second by Director Armstrong. A roll call, please.
Director Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
Director Record.
Aye.
And it passes 5-0. We will move on to item C, which is to adopt a proposed resolution declaring assessor parcel number 302-050-034 in the city of Paris exempt surplus land and approve and authorize agreement with escrow instructions for the transfer of the property rights to IDIL Ramona LLC. Mr. Ward again.
President Pauly, Cheryl Sanders was key to the negotiation of this acquisition, so I've asked her to present this morning.
Absolutely. Good morning.
Board members. So this is a proposed land exchange between IDIL and the district. In terms of the district parcel, it's a fee-owned parcel. It's depicted in the red square. And it's approximately 2,500 square feet. Also depicted on the map is an access easement and our existing well 56. The fee-owned parcel was originally housed our well 50, and it was just destroyed and replaced with well 56 in 1994. And staff has determined that the fee-owned parcel and easement are no longer needed for present or future use by the district. IDIL has approximately 30.3 acres of holdings, and it's surrounded by land use commercial. and it's contiguous to the district fee parcel, and it's district easement located on the developer parcel one as shown on the map. And the district also has an active monitoring well that's located on the north edge of the developer parcel two and their proposed building perimeter. So an overview of the conveyances that were discussed with the developer are, if you look to the northern part of the map, is our existing well 56. They will provide an access easement to the district. We, in turn, will vacate the existing easement and convey the fee-owned parcel. They will also destroy, at their cost, the existing monitoring well and provide us with an easement and construct the new monitoring well site and also provide us an access easement to that new monitoring well location. So the proposed agreement, again, is to convey the fee title to the district, which is, or to the developer, which is 2,500 square feet, and quick claim the 20-foot wide district well 50 easement, which is approximately 11,000 square feet, and quick claim the existing monitoring wells to them. In return, they will construct the new monitoring well, destroy the existing monitoring well, and convey easements for the operation maintenance of the new monitoring well site, which is approximately 1,800 square feet, and also convey to us a 26-foot wide access easement totaling around 50,000 square feet. They will also be required to convey access easements to well 56. And John briefly touched on the Surplus Land Act. In this case, we found that the district parcel would be exempt from the Surplus Lands Act because it is less than 5,000 square feet. It's not contiguous to land owned by state or local agency that is used for open space or low to moderate income housing, and it's being granted to the owner of the adjacent land. So staff is recommending that we adopt a resolution finding that the fee-owned parcel be exempt from the Surplus Lands Act and authorize the general manager or his designee to execute the agreement and escrow instructions for the transfer of the property rights with IDIL and appropriation of funds in the amount of $38,500 to support the property transfer. Are there any questions?
I do have a question. What drives the district's decision in requesting either an easement versus in fee title for a facility?
Well, normally for a facility, we would like to get fee owned, but a lot of times the developers don't want to grant us fee. They only want to grant us an easement. So we usually negotiate that, but for the most part, we try to acquire in fee. But for access, we usually easement would suffice our needs for the operations and maintenance, and we'll route it through different departments, and get recommendations from like operations and maintenance and planning, and once we get all of those back, then that's how we negotiate it.
Could they give you a reason why they don't want to grant it in fee?
They usually, because they like to, they, for funding purposes, they don't like to grant us fee ownership. They like to have that total amount of acreage within their holdings so that when they go to the planning or when they might need it in the future. So they're a little uneasy about granting us fee ownership.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
And if I can maybe add, Director Slauson, if there's other uses for that area, meaning access, other utilities, sometimes the owner will prefer an easement versus fee title transfer.
So as long as that other use didn't interfere with our use,
that's correct.
That'd be fine. Okay.
That's correct.
Gotcha. Thank you.
Quick question. It may be more appropriate for Joe, but when we have a third party destroy a monitoring well for us, do we have some oversight so we know it's done in our standards? And
absolutely. We will have inspection, monitor the activities, as well as the county ultimately has to certify the destruction of a well.
So it's not in our chain of liability in the future because it was not done correctly. Okay.
And there is an adopted state standard for abandoning or destroying any well.
Gotcha.
Yeah, and if I may add, our agreement covers that too. It requires them to make sure that they pull all necessary permits, requirements, and inspections.
Gotcha. Okay, no, thank you on that. With that, if there's no more questions, I will look for a motion.
I'll move approval.
I'll second.
Moved by Director Slauson, second by Director Corona. If I could get a roll call, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Corona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And the item passes 5-0. Thank you for a great presentation. With that, we will move to item 4D, which is to approve and authorize amendments to agreement with CDM Smith for $347,000, Dudek for $159,000, Tetra Tech $210,000, and Woodward and Kern for $96,000 for the Paris North Basin Groundwater Contamination Preservation and Remediation Program, an additional appropriation of $844,000. Good morning, sir.
Good morning, Mr. President and fellow members of the board. I'm happy to be here today to present to you our Paris North Basin Contamination Prevention and Remediation Program. By way of location, the program is focused in the Paris North Basin, which is illustrated here in blue. It's located in the northernmost part of our service area. It's situated between Marge Air Reserve Base in Lake Paris, and it's primarily in the city of Moreno Valley and the northernmost portion of the city of Paris. The program goals and benefits are multifaceted. We're looking to remediate non-point source contamination, which is contamination that's widely spread across an area, in this case, widely spread across this basin. There are three primary groupings we're looking to treat. And that's the Moreno Valley area, Cactus Corridor area, and South area. In those three areas, we're looking to treat for three primary constituents, VOCs, volatile organic compounds, nitrate, and perchlorate. We're also looking to protect the underlying groundwater resources and ensure that we don't threaten other water supply in the area. Further, we're looking to develop this new source of water supply as well as develop a secondary water supply for Marge Air Reserve Base through an agreement with Western Municipal Water District. This program also provides for long-term remediation of the rising groundwater that surrounds the Marge Air Reserve Base. The program facilities, again, are in three basic areas, the Moreno Valley area in the north, and its related treatment facilities. We'll be adding two production wells there. And in the central part of the basin are the Cactus Corridor wells. We'll situate up to four production wells in the related facilities there. And then in the south, we'll add one production well and one wellhead treatment plant for that. In total, we'll have about 6,750 acre-feet per year of water supply. To put that in perspective, that's around 6 million gallons per day of water, and it's relative in size to our Paris II desalination program. This program will provide water supply that will provide for up to 30,000 families in the region. In addition, the program will provide for or require monitoring wells surrounding all of the sites. The program was grant-funded through the state's Prop 1. It was 50% funding. So overall, $90 million program, we stand to receive $45 million in grant funds on the program. The grant requires that the facilities be online in March of 2023. A quick summary of our proposed actions today. We look to advance four amendments, two design amendments, one with CDM Smith and one with Tetra Tech for additional design scope, one with Dudek for additional hydrogeological testing services, primarily noise and vibration monitoring, and then one with Woodard and Kern for additional CEQA support services, specifically for the monitoring wells. Starting off with the CDM Smith Amendment, we advanced a contract with them for the final design of the Cactus Corridor area facilities in August, and at this time, after refinement of the water quality, there are changes necessary for a variety of constituents such as nitrate, perchlorate, iron, and manganese. And so this drove the need for additional design work to add additional treatment processes, including ion exchange and green sand filtration. In addition to those additional processes, we'll need some other ancillary design work. We were able to negotiate a scope and fee for this effort in the amount of approximately $347,000. Back in October 2020, we advanced a contract with DUDEC for hydrogeological construction management services to support our well drilling effort for wells 65, 66, and 204. At this time, we need additional services for noise and vibration monitoring to ensure appropriate levels are being met at the property line in accordance with city ordinance and due to proximity of residences and commercial facilities in the area, as well as to provide for liability protection for the noise and vibration that occurs adjacent to these facilities. In addition to the noise and vibration work, we'll have additional site visits and meetings. We're able to negotiate a scope and fee for this added scope with DUDEC in the amount of $160,000. Moving on to Tetra Tech, we advanced a contract with Tetra Tech in June of 2020 for the Moreno Valley area and South area facilities. At this time, similar to CDM Smith, there are changes in water quality that are needed and for this site specific to iron and manganese, which will also require additional design work for the green sand filtration. In addition, some other design work needed for ion exchange vendor selection, building, and other ancillary work. We're able to negotiate a scope and fee with Tetra Tech in the amount of $210,000 to advance this work. And last but not least, we advanced CEQA. In June, we prepared an M&D for the monitoring wells, for the initial 10 monitoring wells needed for the program. And after further review and discussion with the state, an additional 11 wells are needed to complete the program. In addition to that, the locations of those well sites have changed. So with that, we'd like to advance a new CEQA document for these changes. We're able to negotiate a scope and fee with Woodard and Curran in the amount of $96,000 to advance this work. This slide illustrates our program summary schedule. There's a lot of activities going on concurrently, and at this time we're about 60% complete or moving beyond 60% in our designs. And we're underway with construction of the first drilling package for the three wells I mentioned earlier. And again, we're on target to meet our goal of delivering these facilities by March of 2023. So with that, today I recommend we advance the four contract amendments, one being with CDM Smith for the Cactus Corridor area facilities in the amount of approximately $347,000. Two, a contract amendment with DUDEC in the amount of approximately $160,000 for the additional hydrogeological services during drilling. Three, a design contract amendment with Tetra Tech for the additional scope for Moreno Valley South Area facilities, and four, the additional CEQA support with Woodard and Curran in the amount of approximately $96,000. With that, I recommend we advance additional appropriation in the amount of approximately $844,000, taking the total appropriation to date just under $24 million. With that, I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
See no question. I'm sorry, do you have
just
a question?
Mark, just a comment. Obviously, this project is going to protect some of the basin that's not contaminated from potential contamination, so it has a lot of merit from that. But creating new supply, local supply, I think is always a great opportunity, and especially with all the funding that you have, and certainly seems like these are reasonable amendments and needed amendments to the project. So I would make a motion to...
All right, that is moved by Director Armstrong.
I'll second it.
Seconded by Director Slauson. Madam Clerk.
Director Pauly.
Aye.
Director Corona.
Aye.
Director Slauson.
Aye.
Director Armstrong.
Aye.
Director Record.
Aye.
And the item passes 5-0. Thank you for a fine presentation. That concludes our discussion calendar. We will go on to item 5, which is our information items. And I know last time we had a long meeting and were not able to get to the 2021 plan of finance. I know personally I've been waiting for 2 weeks for this presentation. Excited Well, so, Mr. Adams, we will turn the microphone over to you.
Thank you very much, President Pauly and members of the board. As you mentioned, this is just an informational item for the board. This is our annual plan of finance that's presented annually to the board. Sort of give you, you know, our plan for the year. I'm going to spend some time talking about some highlights and really going forward how we are going to handle managing our debt. You know, I've only been here for 4 months. This is just a great example of how we manage our debt. I've been very impressed with our debt management program, you know, setting our annual goals and really setting up what we plan to achieve and sort of moving forward is very beneficial to both our ratepayers and the property owners that we're managing this debt for. So I'm going to jump into the agenda very quickly. And this is very similar to the presentation I made at the admin committee meeting on the 7th of January. First, I'm going to give you just a brief overview of the market, show you where rates were for 2020 and where we anticipate rates to be over the next 12 months. Also, I'm going to specifically talk about our land secured program, our special funding districts, go over the highlights for 2020, and then some of the items that we're going to do in 2021, and then do the same thing for the general district debt. All right, so quickly on the market update, this is very important because our rates are based on where MMD is, which is the AAA bond index. The year ended at about 140 basis points or 1.4%. It actually hit an all-time low at in August at 1.27%. The first graph I'm really showing you is just to show you the volatility that occurred. And if you really focus on March, this was during the pandemic, and volatility was significant. At the same time, the Fed Reserve reduced rates twice, the 1st of March, I think it was the 3rd, and then the 15th, really taking rates down to zero at the Fed level. As you can see, rates are stabilized in May. And if you recall, we were actually in the market on May 27th, refunding about $120 million of variable rate debt, which we really benefited based on, you know, that low rate at that point in time. So that's the first graph. And then I want to talk about the second graph, which just shows you really the gray bar is where the range for rates have been based on maturity. So when you look at the one-year maturity out to the 30-year maturity, you see where that range is. What I want to focus on is the green line, which is the low, and then the line right above it, which is the dark blue, which is where we currently are at. So we are at historic lows and have been there for the past 9 months. So that's my update on the market. And I should have mentioned this, certainly the Fed had their recent meeting. They've come out. They don't anticipate raising rates, the Fed rate, for at least 2 years, and some even project sometime in 2023. So we're certainly going to have opportunities over the next 24 months, maybe for other refunding opportunities, and really take advantage of the low rates. So moving on to our land secured program, which we call special funding districts, and this is really a recap. As you can see, the land secured program has been very busy. Last year, under Thomas's leadership, we actually did 6 new bond issues for CFDs. The table, and I think this is what's really important, is when we actually go to market, and especially with the favorable rates that have existed, we have actually achieved savings for property owners. So based on these 6 bond issues, and you can see the number of parcels, property owners should anticipate in the next year are savings that range, and the third one that has zero will be updated, but should range between $80 up to $500. So certainly when we go to market, especially based on the rates, we've been able to save property owners money on their future tax bills. In addition to these 6 bond issues, we actually formed 4 CFDs last year. This is very similar to prior years. I think the year 2019, we had done 6 new CFDs. Certainly, activity continues, even with the pandemic, on residential housing. And as you'll see, we have 6 that are potential for this year. We also completed 11 joint community facilities agreements with partner agencies. As part of the annual process, we actually levied taxes on 83 districts, which is about 16,000 house properties through the year. And then finally, two items, just sort of updating the program. We went through our underwriter pool, updated that pool, and added an additional underwriter. And then also on the appraisal services, with the pandemic, our approach has been requiring appraisals for all new bond issues, and having that third appraisal firm on contract with us has helped us make sure that those bond issues are done on time. So moving on, and this is really for 2021, I want to talk about some of the things that we plan to do. The first one, the planned bond issuances, there are three that we actually plan to do this year. There may be additional, but at this point, just these three. The first one, the board approved in December, and we actually priced it the second week of January and actually closed it just last week. And the total true interest cost on that was about 3.1%. The other two, which are planned for the second quarter, are with D.R. Horton. And so same developer, same disclosure, we'll probably combine those two bond issues, get some efficiencies there, but plan to do a bond issues for those two CFDs. And then as far as formations, there was one that was approved, or I shouldn't say approved, the public hearing was set last board meeting, and that public hearing is scheduled for March 3rd. The other four are in the pipeline going through due diligence. We're not really sure when those will come to the board, but we do anticipate those to come this year. And this is the final item for the land secured program, and really the big one. I think what's great is I'll be able to give you even better news than this slide actually provides. So if you recall, this was approved by the board last meeting. It impacted 11 or 10 bonds, 12 districts, par amount about $26 million. And at the time, and this was going back to late December, we anticipated net present value savings at about $4 million with an annual savings of $325. We priced last week, and based on really low supply, high demand from investors, the fact that this was a rated land secured deal at a single A by Standard & Poor's, the NPV went up to $5.7 million, which is almost a 20% savings for the property owners. The annual savings is going to be about $400,000. So certainly better news than we had anticipated, which is great because of the supply. And as we do the tax levies this June, and we identify the actual savings for each property owner, we'll send out notices to the 4,000 property owners to let them know of the savings that they should anticipate next year on their tax bill. All right, so moving on to general district debt, and just this is really a recap for 2020. First thing, same thing, updated our underwriters pool. We actually have five underwriters for the general debt, J.P. Morgan, Morgan Stanley, Bank of America, Citibank, and Academy Securities. One of the big things from a debt profile is we eliminated our senior lien. That matured in July, so that's a good thing for the district and really helps our debt profile. And also, certainly during the pandemic, it's always difficult, but we reaffirmed our AA rating on the subordinate debt with both Fitch and Moody's. Certainly, we think our debt profile warrants a AAA, and as you know, with the pandemic, very difficult for a rating agency to necessarily upgrade you. But good news, they certainly see the creditworthiness of EMWD. And then the other big item was the refunding. And I mentioned this in May, towards the end of May, we did refinance a significant portion of our variable rate debt, which is about, as it says there, 44% of our variable rate debt. And that's really how variable rate debt should be, is during maybe higher interest rate times, you issue variable rate and then take advantage when rates are low and then fix it out. And in that bond issue, we got a 2.35% on true interest cost. So certainly I mentioned it improves our credit and risk profile and provides flexibility going forward. All right, next slide. This is just sort of a highlight of our debt profile. As you know, we have $1 billion in outstanding long-term debt, and it's very important for us to be managing that. We mentioned our all-in weighted cost of capital at 2.12%, and that's for the year. And just to give you context, if you're talking 10 basis points or a tenth of a percent, that costs EMWD $1 million. So having $1 billion out there, that we're financing is very important for us to be managing that. The table to your right just shows you that senior lien would be AAA and our subordinate lien would be AA. The first donut, I mentioned this, senior lien was paid off. All of our debt is subordinate lien. And then second donut shows our variable rate. We have reduced our variable rate exposure. A portion of that is synthetic fix, which is variable rate with a swap. And then we talk about our variable rate. 3/4 of our variable rate is on SIFMA, which is an index, and then LIBOR is the other 25%. And I'll talk a little about LIBOR in a minute. The final, bar graph at the bottom shows that over the years we have worked very hard to level our debt service. And you can see that going out at least for the next 10 years, really level debt service helps with, as far as rates on ratepayers and how we're financing that over the period of time. So very beneficial for the district. All right, moving on to...
Any quick question, please?
Yes, Director Record, sorry.
What is SIFMA?
SIFMA, yes. I always forget what the name is, but let me give it secured. Hold on. Oh, here it is. Securities Industry and Financial Markets Association. It's just another index that has come up in competition to LIBOR, but is one of two indexes that will be really used when the transition of LIBOR is replaced. It's SIFMA and SOFR are really the two other predominant indexes for determining floating rate or variable rate debt.
Thank you.
You're welcome. Sorry about that. I try not to use the abbreviations.
That's good. And done a good job in here of most abbreviations are, we see what they are. And so I appreciate that.
Not a problem. So talking about the plan for this year, currently we do not anticipate any new money needs, at least currently. And I say that with a caveat. As Laura mentioned earlier, we're going through the budget process. We are updating our 5-year capital plan, going into rate development, and just really planning for the next 2 years, 5 years, and updating our long-term financial plan. So with all of those things, as we do analysis on our fund balances and our reserves, we'll have a better picture when we come to the board on the budget on whether or not there are any needs. But at this point, we don't anticipate those needs. So I want to always put that caveat because I hate to be back here in June or July asking to, issue more debt. So that's no new money needs. LIBOR transition. This was a big issue last year as LIBOR was anticipated to sort of transition out this year. I'll talk a little about that. It only impacts one bond issue and about 5% of our total debt. But with the extension to the phase out until 2023, we don't anticipate this to be an issue. And then really the big one out there is we have some FRNs, which are floating rate notes, variable rate debt, that have tender dates coming up in October. And as I show you there, we will start working on the refinancing or remarketing plan. They can be called as soon as April 1st, so we're working on that as we speak to get ready and get in front of the board by April or mid-April. And we'll look at different options related to potentially fixing them out or using a different index for the LIBOR as we refinance those. All right, so quickly, I have two slides on LIBOR transition, so I'll try to make these quick. So in 2017, it was announced the transition away from LIBOR. This was really in direct response to the manipulation that happened during the Great Financial the Great Recession and the financial crisis. Initially, it was anticipated to be by December 2021. There was an extension by IBA that extended from November to 2023, as I noted there, and I identify the next option for us if the transition actually occurs sooner or prior to our remarketing of the LIBOR variable rate debt, we would use the fallback provisions. Now, with all of this said, with the efforts that we plan to do over the next 6 months, we do not anticipate this to be a real issue going forward for us. Here is just a quick slide just to give you a little bit of exposure. I talked about the 5%. We only have one bond issue with the refinancing of the 2020 last May, which eliminates some of that variable debt. This is the only bond issue that is currently remaining related to LIBOR. We currently pay 70% of LIBOR plus 30 basis point. LIBOR right now is hovering between 9 and 13 basis points. So for this specific debt, I think we're paying about 37 basis points. And that's, certainly for a variable rate, that's really good right now. I will say this, we do have a swap agreement, which is why this is a synthetic fix, where we're paying Wells Fargo 3.1% on it. So just the highlight there, we'll focus on looking at the options. There's no question that if we continue to leave this as variable rate debt, we will use one of the other indexes, either SIFMA or SOFA, as we refinance or remarket these items. And then finally, and this is my final slide, and really the key focus for this year is that we do have three variable rate debts bonds out there. I'm highlighting 2018 B and C. These are ones that we are actively working on. We actually have a kickoff with our financing team next week. We anticipate being in front of the board in the second meeting of April. As I mentioned, these are, we certainly can call these April 1st, the tender date of October 1st. So we want to be ready to be at market when it is, advantageous for EMWD. Now, with that, there's considerations with LIBOR phasing out. Certainly, the supply for SIFMA and SOFA FRNs or variable rate debt will likely increase. Depending on the supply and the demand, it may increase our costs. Right now, it seems very favorable. I know that even Met has been out in the market recently and has gotten some great rates. And so just a note there is we will work with our advisors, really look at all alternatives, and then be back in front of the board as soon as the second meeting in April. And with that, this is a team effort, and certainly Thomas put a lot of effort into this presentation and does a great job of managing the program. And certainly with Laura's involvement, it is really a team effort. So that available for any questions.
Questions?
I have a comment. I just think when you have those special financing districts, it often goes unnoticed, the proactive management and the stewardship and, the ownership that you take on those to actively manage and refund them and provide those opportunities. I know you would like all the property owners to know of the great things that you've just done to help them with their property taxes. And it's not always appreciated, but I think it's a real compliment to the team that does actively look at that on behalf of the property owners and manage those, when opportunities come up. So just compliment you on that.
Yeah, thank you. And as you know, this refunding, this 10 bond issues really is throughout our service district and several in the Menifee area. And certainly President Pauly has given us good suggestions on the notification stuff, and we're coordinating that and, really good for the community. So appreciate the comments.
Could you take 30 seconds to a minute and just outline for the board all the services that PFM provide for us? I know they do a really good job for us, but it's always good to hear what they do.
Yeah, so, we really have two financial advisors, and we mentioned PFM there. One financial advisor is Fieldman Roll-Up, and they are the ones that help on the land secured side and help us actively manage that component and really act as a fiduciary. I mean, you mentioned it. We have a fiduciary responsibility for those that are for managing that CFD debt in the benefits of the property owner. So they do a great job helping us fulfill that role. PFM helps us. Uh-oh, that's not good. PFM helps us on the debt side, their sophistication and ability. Remember, it's $1 billion. So things like the variable rate, the analysis that they do help us ultimately choose the best path for when we're refinancing that debt. So really, these are people that we've been doing business, having long relationships, and they have a fiduciary responsibility. That's what they're really paid to do. And so they've been very helpful during that time. I need to get a napkin.
Okay. Any other questions? With that,
I'm sorry, question.
Director Record, I apologize.
Oh, that's okay. Just a comment. First of all, I agree completely with Director Armstrong. I think staff does a great job of managing our long-term debt in these areas. You mentioned that the consensus is interest rates are going to stay low for the next couple of years, and I agree that maybe a certain part of our economy is not going to rebound until then, but I think the other reason that interest rates might go up is because of inflation. And man, I am seeing inflation everywhere, from, you know, fertilizer, cars, home prices, you name it. So I've never been good at predicting anything, but I wouldn't hold back on any refinancings thinking that, because I don't think interest rates are going to go any lower, but I just have a sense that at some point, maybe towards the end of the year, the Fed's really going to have to look at where we are inflation-wise.
Agree 100%. I mean, certainly that is, we talked about the $100 million we're going to bring back to the board. We're doing it in April, as soon as we're able to call the bonds and refinance it, because we want to be ready. We don't want to wait until October and then see, you know, how inflation or how rates may change. Now, that said, you know, it's only a few months out, but agree 100%. We're going to always be prepared to move as fast as possible and take advantage of where rates are. Really just the comment about where the Fed is, you know, there are certain bonds that are outstanding that don't have call dates for 12 to 18 months, and we may have to wait to that, but we will be ready if rates continue to be as low. So appreciate the comment, Director Record.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Director Record, I think your point is very valid. We are trying to save money wherever we can, because on the expense side, we're seeing inflation there. I think we reported it during our rate discussion. You know, our chemical costs are going up. Edison's raising their rates. So, you know, we're trying to do everything we can to squeeze out every bit of savings we can get.
Yeah, I don't see anywhere where things aren't going up. It's been really dramatic.
Agreed.
Very good. There's no other questions or comments from Mr. Adams, why don't we go ahead and take a 10-minute break?
Thank you.
Start to make our way back to our seats. We will reconvene the meeting, and we are on item 5B, which is the fiscal year 2021 first quarter enterprise report. I bet Mr. Ward is going to do that for us, because he always does a fine job at these, and I always look forward to hearing these. So,
thank you.
The floor is yours, sir.
Thank you, President Pauly, members of the board. Yes, it's time for the district-wide report card.
All right.
And before I get into too much of the depth, I want to just provide a little bit of background. This is a product of the general manager's request in 2012. We were able to present to Paul the over 100 process measures that is being managed at manager staff, director, department head staff, and realized that we really needed a summary, a roll-up. How is the district doing across all functions? So at Paul's request and with a lot of input from this board, we developed this balanced scorecard. So the balanced scorecard covers everything from safety to customer satisfaction to financial performance. And we, every quarter, bring to the board for transparency and for reference information for our board and the public exactly how we're performing across all 12 metrics. We've received some valuable input from Director Record at committee, and it had to do with the EMWD labor. So EMW labor, it hits our books every 2 weeks. And because it hits the books every 2 weeks, 2 months out of the year, we have to reflect three pay periods against
4 out of these 12 metrics. And it was moving that needle. So Director Eckert has asked us to look into it. We've got meetings set up with the CFO, with finance, to look at ways of normalizing that labor across the quarter. The reason for that is it's going to help us, again, true up the metric and allow EMWD to be more in charge of what moves that needle. So today's presentation is still reflecting 2 months where we see 3 pay periods hit the book. But before we come back to the board next quarter, we'll have a better approach of addressing that. So with that, we're going to roll into just the highlights, but I'm going to turn it over to Andy Regalado. She is our systems analyst. She's here today to present the highlights of the 12 metrics. She's also responsible for collecting, critiquing, and analyzing these metrics. So with that, Andy.
Excellent.
Thank you, John. So I will roll right into our first efficiency measure. This is water operating costs per acre foot deliver. The goal line here is reflected as a historic average. This is due to reflect seasonal changes in water usage. So quarter one trended above average due to mild summer average temperatures, which resulted in lower than expected water deliveries. Moving on to our next efficiency measure, this is wastewater treatment operating costs per million gallons treated. The goal line reflects what was set up for the fiscal year budget, and quarter one trended above average for the month of August due to multiple payroll periods. So August is the month that 3 payroll periods hit the books, and also we had an increase in energy rates. Our next efficiency measure is recycled water operating costs per acre foot produced. So quarter one trended above average for the month of August, again due to the multiple payroll periods hitting the books and an increase in energy rates. Our next efficiency measure is self-generated power. This is the percent of EMWD's self-generated power from solar panels, fuel cells, and microturbines compared to potential production provided to us by our vendors. So both quarters, we see favorable results. Within this graph, the line chart represents the potential production provided to us by our vendors, and the bar chart represents actual production for each entity. It's important that we track potential production. If the units don't produce at what the vendors give us for potential production, EMWD is provided a credit. So now we roll into our reliability measures. This is customer hours out of service. So the fiscal year goal is 8 hours per 1,000 counts. The trend for quarter one was above the goal line for the month of September due to a mainline leak in Homeland on Highway 74 near Theta Street. So the good news about this leak is that staff was able to get 133 customers back up and running in 7 hours. The total project took 34 hours to complete. Okay, our next reliability measure is wastewater treatment reliability. This is the uptime of our treatment plants. The goal is to be at 98% or above. So the trend was favorable for quarter one. Very impressive results here. Our next reliability measure is wastewater spills of collection and treatment systems. So the largest and only spill for the quarter occurred in August due to a malfunction at the Pujol lift station. Approximately 4,000 gallons were spilled. The entire spill was recovered. Now we roll into our service measures. This is our customer satisfaction score of last experience survey. So this measure measures the average score for customer service call-ins as well as customers who have had recent contact with the district in the field. So the goal is based on receiving a 4 out of 5 on a 1 to 5 survey questionnaire. So the trend for quarter one is favorable. Now we roll into our safety measures. This is injury and illness rate as defined by OSHA. So the goal is to be below 3. So the trend for the past 2 quarters is favorable. And now we roll into our financial measures. This is the general and administrative costs as a percentage of total operating cost. So the goal line is expected to be 11.3% based on the fiscal year budget. So results are favorable for the last 2 quarters. And we could see that downward trend in our general and administrative costs. That's attributed to 26 vacated budgeted positions. Our next financial measure is net operating margin. This is revenue minus cost. So the trend for the past 2 quarters is favorable. We see that large uptick in July that is due to a $2 million payroll accrual reversal. And our last financial measure is capital improvement actual to budget. So the goal is to be within 25% above or below the projected cost for the month. So quarter one trended below the goal line due to a slow start in July. Materials delays due to COVID caused a delay in expenses for some projects. So for the first quarter of 2021, 10 out of the 12 measures are performing better than the monthly goal. We have 2 measures that have hit our watch list, which is water operating costs per acre foot deliver and capital improvement project actual to budget. And the next quarterly report is scheduled for March of 2021. We will have a slight delay in that. We're giving all of the measures a kind of a facelift. We're transitioning that into a new software suite. So with that, I'll take any questions.
Any questions, Director Slauson?
Thank you. I think this is valuable, but I was just curious. In your job, in John's job, you have information being fed to you probably constantly.
From
different departments.
We do, and what I do is after I compile these measures for the quarter, I directly work with several different departments to get the justifications and really understand what's going on with the numbers.
So intuitively, just based on doing this constantly, you'd probably have a sense that something was wrong, if something was, and you'd look into it.
Yeah, I do. I can tell by the trends. It took me a little while to get that down, but I can tell, and John also helps me with that as well.
Okay. So it's like we're keeping a handle on some oversight, in a sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And we do cheat a little bit. We look forward to current data to see if the trend is correcting itself or not. But as Andy was pointing out, we deal with the subject matter experts and drill into the root cause.
Okay, yeah, we get it periodically.
Right.
So we're just getting the end results and the conclusions and recommendations, but you're constantly monitoring it, so it's a real, probably a better tool than I would even imagine.
Yeah, there's a lot of behind-the-scenes corrections and understanding, especially data cleanup, making sure that needle is pure, if you will. No, most of these metrics, we get weekly summaries on.
Okay. Great. I don't have any questions.
And they're exactly for what you point out, Director Slauson. They're to set off red flags, alarm bells, disturbing trends. And as John points out, we don't wait until the end of the quarter to look at that. As the data comes in,
both John and Andy look at that very closely and then work out with the subject matter experts or those who are responsible or own that specific metric and go in and try to get a more thorough understanding of what's driving that trend.
Okay. Great. Thank you.
Any other questions? All right. Thank you for a great report. Really appreciate it.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
That we will go to item number 6 on the agenda, which is to receive and file various reports, and I will look for a motion in a second.
I'll make that motion.
Director Crona makes the motion.
I'll second.
Director Armstrong seconds it. If you do a roll call, please.
Director Pauly?
Aye.
Director Crona?
Aye.
Director Slauson?
Aye.
Director Armstrong?
Aye.
Director Record?
Aye.
And that passes 5-0. We'll bring this to item 7, which is our calendar review. And Ms. Perkins, good morning.
Good morning, President Pauly, members of the board. Listed on the first page of your calendar review are three events that the board has been invited to participate in. The first is the Municipal Water District of Orange County's 2021 Virtual Water Policy Forum. The topic for this year's event is the Water Resilience Portfolio. That event is scheduled for Wednesday, February 24th. From 10:30 a.m. to noon, and there is a flyer with more program information about the speakers on page 5 of this review. And the next two events listed are the Aqua DC Conference. It's been switched to a different format this year. It is virtual, and it will be a series of webinars. The first will be held on Wednesday, February 24th, and it is in conflict with the prior event that I mentioned. Begins at 9 a.m., and this event is the Congressional Speech Program. They'll be discussing the current priorities of Congress. The next three events are also the Aqua DC Federal Water Issues webinars. They're one-hour webinars on March 17th, 24th, and 31st. Those are all Wednesdays. And on page 6 of this calendar review, you'll find more detailed information. Please let me know if you're interested in attending, and I can get you registered. Moving to page 2, we've got the board's master calendar for the next 2 weeks, beginning with tomorrow. Beginning with tomorrow at 1:30 p.m., Director Armstrong will be attending the district's presentation to the Menifee Masters. The Joint Inland and Orange County Caucuses will meet at 11:30 a.m. for Director Record. And the Board Administrative Committee will meet at 4 p.m. for Directors Pauly and Slauson. On Friday, February 5th, at 7:45 a.m., Director Slauson will attend the district's presentation to the Moreno Valley Hispanic Chamber of Commerce. On Monday, February 8th and Tuesday, February 9th, the Metropolitan Water District Committee and Board meetings will be held, Director Record. And on Tuesday, February 9th at 3:30 p.m., the joint meeting with Elsinore Valley Water District is on Director Armstrong and Director Corona's calendar. On Wednesday, February 10th and Thursday, February 11th, Director Pauly will participate in the CalDESAL annual conference. There is an additional spot available for that conference if anyone else would like to participate. On Wednesday, February 10th at 9 a.m., Director Armstrong will visit the Customer Service Call Center for a tour. On Thursday, February 11th at 7:30 a.m., Director Slauson has an update meeting with the general manager. At 8:30 a.m., the Rancho California Water District Board will meet. Director Corona will participate. And on February 11th at 3:30 p.m., the Board Planning Committee will meet, and that's Director Corona and Record. On Tuesday, February 16th, the SAPA Commission will meet at 9:30 a.m., Director Slauson's calendar. Moving to page 3, we have a list of key events, and I'd just like to point out the Riverside County Water Task Force Speaker Series. The next event has been scheduled for February 26th, which is a Friday, at 7:30 a.m., so you should be getting additional information on that shortly, but please save the date. The rest of the calendar review shows the upcoming board meetings for the next 3 months, the board committee meetings, and interagency meetings. Are there any questions on the calendar? That concludes my report.
Thank you very much, Nicole. I appreciate that. We will go on then with directors' reports, and we'll start with Director Armstrong.
Not listed on here, but I did attend for the first time the Operations and Engineering Committee meeting, and I just wanted to compliment everybody involved in that because there's an awful lot of material that was on that agenda, and it really shows a lot of what's going on at the district. And in an hour and a half, they got through, I don't know, a ton of different projects, and it was just really nice. They did it, I think, because they were very concise presentations. They were very comprehensive and right on point, and not everybody on the entire team and who participated did a great job. So I just wanted to compliment them. It was really a nice meeting to attend. The Quarterly Deferred Comp Administrative Oversight Committee attended that with President Pauly, and there are a number of staff members on that committee, including a representative of the employees on that committee, which I thought was a really nice element. But everything looks good on that, and there are a couple funds that the committee is watching, but clearly it's in good hands with the financial advisor that's overseeing this and watching it on the district's behalf. What was really impressive is that 95% of the Eastern employees participate in some form in the deferred compensation program, which is pretty incredible to see, and I think real kudos to the team here at Eastern to generate that kind of participation. So I thought that was sort of a key takeaway. And then the Quail Valley Subarea 4, I know the general manager spoke about that, but I do just concur with what he said earlier, but I do think it was really nice to see the city of Menifee very engaged and very knowledgeable about what's taking place and very supportive of the efforts and the approach that staff outlined going forward. Those are my comments.
Very good. Thank you so much. Director Corona.
Yesterday I attended the Rancho Eastern Ad Hoc Committee, and that was a good meeting. Eva ran the meeting, and we all participated. It was very good.
Very good. Appreciate that. I attended the Western joint meeting with Western. That is always good presentations by our staff. We had Director Denstedt, Director Torres from Western available on that meeting, and Joe and Paul always do a good job, and talked a lot about March and some of the common things we have going on. Was able to sit in a meeting between Eastern, Western, and Elsinore with Congressman Calvert's staff, where we got, and Jolene was a part of that too. We got an update on things going on in D.C. We also let them know what our priorities were coming in the coming year. And I just want to say I really do appreciate Congressman Calvert's involvement with our district. I think it pays a lot of dividends. Was not able to attend the Cal-DSAL Executive Committee meeting due to another conflict on my schedule. Had a good update with the general manager. Again, those are always helpful when it comes to getting a little more in depth of what comes before this board, and I hope all the other directors here take advantage of that because I find it extremely useful. WRCOG, I am back on that board, so I got a briefing, got brought up on what's gone on the last 8 years while Director Slauson was representing us for there, and a lot of good stuff, so got caught up on some of their energy programs that they are involving themselves with. As Director Armstrong mentioned, a good quarterly deferred compensation meeting, and again, I get his kudos to the staff, the fact that we have that many people in the district participating in their long-term future, and I think that is really good. And we do have a good advisory team on that. So I'm very happy that Director Armstrong is going to be part of that. I think his knowledge and background on financial matters will bring a lot to that committee. So look forward to working with you on that. Western WRCOG is doing an economic development corporation or proposing one for the area. I sat in on a call with a lot of the elected leaders in Southwest Riverside County to discuss what that may look like, how it may benefit the area. I feel it probably would benefit the area. A lot of areas around the country have economic development corporations, and as we are going to experience continued build-out here in our service area, I think it's good to be part of that. Southern California Water Coalition, that was the quarterly meeting. We had a gentleman who ran the Public Utilities Commission in San Francisco as kind of the lead guest speaker, and talking about, you know, as we move into a new administration, some of the challenges environmentally and other regulatory things that may be coming our way. And again, Paul always does a fantastic job on those meetings. Had another a meeting with the Deputy General Manager where I got a very good update on billing software and what's coming down there. And Director Armstrong, I'm glad that you have scheduled to go over to where I call it our cash register department, where we have people that help our customers. It's an amazing operation over there, and Charles does a good job. So I'm glad you're touring that. I think that's important for directors to do. And then I attended the regular WRCOG committee on the 1st. Got an update on the PACE program, which is got itself into a little trouble, and kind of how we're getting it out of it and recreating that program, and some other just general updates on WRCOG. And then finally, I was going to have an audit with the Water Master audit team yesterday, but somehow we got a scheduling mix up. Nicole, I think you're fixing that for me, correct? Very good. Thank you for that. And that was a long report, but Director Record, your meeting.
Thank you, President Pauley. Delta Conveyance Finance Authority, we continue to be in sort of a holding pattern, obviously, until we have a project ready to build. We did elect new officers, and I stepped down as president and I'm now vice president. We did talk about maybe doing some outreach to the public to give a more accurate picture of what financing conveyance will look like. There's a lot of misinformation, as you would expect. There's many committees were met on January 26th. Good meetings. The IRP seems to be moving along. So maybe we'll have something by the end of the year. But other than that, good meeting.
Okay. And then did you cover the Rancho Water?
He was at the same meeting.
Okay. I got you. All right. Apologize. So then Director Slauson.
Yes, I attended the joint meeting with Western along mm-hmm. with President Pauley and discussed issues that were common interests. Attended the Chamber of Commerce breakfast, and Southern Cal Edison was the presenter, their economic and business representative, and there was also a city council update. Attended the SAPA Water Authority workshop yesterday, and Brenda Denstedt, the new chair. This is of the Project Area 23 committee. And Jasmine's the vice chair. Jasmine is the president, the chairman of the SAPA Commission. And a number of other things, went over the budget, and we also approved the agreement for Jeffrey Mosher to be the new general manager. I also attended the Riverside Community College District Foundation on the 26th, our executive committee, and we approved the financial auditor's report and nominated some new members. That concludes my
time. Thank you very much. Thank you for everybody. It's a lot of things going on with the district and the directors. Always good to hear about. With that, do we have any directors' comments or future agenda items? Director Record, any comments or future agenda items?
Nothing at this time. Thank you.
Okay, very good. That will then take us. I understand we have a need for a closed session.
Yes, sir.
That's correct, Mr. Chair. Under item 9, under Government Code Section 54957, public employment concerning the general manager recruitment. Shayla has provided myself and Director Record with a separate call-in number for the closed session.
We'll take a few minutes and get ourselves prepared for closed session. Can you please give a report on the closed session item?
Yes, I can, Mr. Chair. Thank you. The board met pursuant to Government Code Section 54957 to discuss public employment concerning general manager recruitment. A discussion was had by the board. No formal action was taken by the board. That concludes my closed session report.
Very good. With that, we will adjourn the meeting until 9 a.m. on February 17th. Thank you, everyone.